3. For both lists, pick your top 5 to 6 values and write them down on 2 separate sheets of paper. Title one sheet, Life Values, and the other, Work Values. 4. Under each value, list all of the ways you're currently living out of alignment with this value. For example, if one of your values is quality time with family, but you travel 5 days a week, you may not be honoring this value. 5. For each value, think about actions you could take to fix those out-of-alignment situations. Ask yourself, what do I need to do to correct this situation so I'm honoring my core values? If you use the example about family time, maybe one action is cutting back on your travel schedule, or hiring out some household tasks when you're home so you can spend more quality time with family. Write these down for both life and work, even if the actions seem impossible right now. 6. On both lists of actions, put a check mark next to the actions that are doable for you now or in the near future. Break these actions down into even smaller, easily manageable actions. These actions might involve making calls, rearranging your schedule, delegating some responsibilities, brainstorming a possible career change, thinking of ways to re-engage with your spouse, etc. Once you have a list of values that align with your goals, review it on a daily basis and make sure that the actions you take match these desired outcomes. You may want to focus first on your personal values and then on your professional values, or you might choose one value from each and start there. No matter what you pick, be sure to start with the area of your life where you feel the biggest disconnect. This is where you likely feel the most internal pain and mental agitation. Chip away at your action list daily so you can create changes and boundaries that prevent you from mindlessly wandering away from your values again. Even small incremental changes can create a huge positive shift in your attitude. You'll have a sense of direction and a purpose that feels authentic to you, even if you can't act on it all immediately. This is an incredibly empowering feeling. You still have times of transition and upheaval, but this values exercise gives you the tools to navigate through all of life's ups and downs. Strategy number 2. Clarify your life priorities. Once you've defined your core values, you should use this information to complete another exercise that will enrich your life. Clarify your life priorities so you know exactly how you want to spend your time, energy, and money. Without knowing our priorities, we allow the pressures of life to determine our actions and decisions. An email comes in and we respond. An enticing offer appears on our Facebook page and we buy it. Someone interrupts our workflow and we allow it. When we don't know the bigger why of our lives, there are no rules, no boundaries, no priorities to help us. Here's another exercise that we recommend that will help you figure out where you are currently spending your time, energy, and money. Answer the following questions as honestly as possible. Also, be sure to have your list of personal and professional core values handy as you answer. How much time per day do you feel you waste on activities unrelated to your core values? That is, surfing the net, watching mindless TV, shopping, or working in a job you hate? How are you spending money unconsciously? How are you interacting with the people you care about unconsciously? How do you make better career decisions? That is, do you have a predetermined plan or do you spend most of your day in reaction mode? How much time do you spend worrying about how you should best spend your time and money? What tasks, obligations, and relationships are you allowing in your life unconsciously? How are you neglecting other important parts of your life that you never seem to have time for? Now that you see how you're actually spending your energy and focus, let's determine the ideal way you'd like to prioritize the important areas of your life. For the sake of this discussion, let's look at 7 main life areas to help you establish your priorities and how you want to spend your time and money. If you want to add or remove any of these areas, feel free to do so if they don't apply to you now. The areas are 1. Career, 2. Family, 3. Marriage or love partnership, 4. Spiritual, personal growth, self-improvement, 5. Leisure, social, 6. Life management, that is, home tasks, financial planning, budgeting, etc. 7. Health and fitness. If you sleep 8 hours a day, that leaves 16 waking hours. Let's remove 2 hours a day for personal hygiene activities and eating. That leaves 14 waking hours a day or 98 hours a week. For the sake of simplicity, let's round that up to 100 hours a week. In an ideal world, how would you prioritize those 7 key areas of your life? How many hours of those 100 per week would you prefer to devote to each area, using your values to help guide you? 2 examples. Barry's current life priorities focus heavily on career, love relationship, and life management. Her children are young adults, and since she recently moved to a new city, many of her friends and family aren't nearby. Ideally, she'd like to give more time to leisure and social activities, as well as fitness and self-improvement. She's trying to focus more on these things as she gets more acclimated to her new location. Steve's current priority focuses heavily on family, due to his recent marriage, the birth of his son, and the fact that his parents just turned 70. So his current goal is to spend as much time as possible with the people he loves the most in the world. While his career, that is, online business and fitness, were the biggest priorities only a few years ago, they are now less important than his interpersonal relationships. Often this means letting go of the major goals that once seemed important. So while he still likes to work hard, he's learned not to feel anxious if he can't hit a milestone related to business or his fitness. Now, these are just 2 examples from the authors. To help you find your priorities, we recommend answering 2 simple questions. 1. How different is your current life priority reality from your ideal? 2. What are some actions you need to take to focus your efforts on what really matters to you? We recommend you begin with the priority that can make the most positive difference in your life, or where you feel the most imbalance. You may find that this area reflects one or more of your values that you aren't honoring. For example, you might have a core value related to family and a life priority of spending more time with your family. Start small by making the decision to add 1 extra hour a week spending quality time with your family. Of course, this will bump out some other activity, but you often bump out something that can be easily bumped out, or at least something that isn't a big priority. Continue adding weekly time to your life priorities until you have them rearranged to more closely match your ideal. Sometimes changing a priority can be difficult. If you want to spend more time with your family, will that impact your work schedule? If so, what do you need to do to manage any fallout? If you want to focus more on your health and fitness, you'll have to create new and challenging habits to ensure you follow through on this priority. If you want to have a healthy, happy marriage, you may have to give up time in front of the TV or on the computer, which might be hard at first. Just stating your life priorities isn't enough. You have to take these sometimes difficult actions necessary to make the changes you want to see in your life. But the closer you come to your ideal, the less internal conflict and struggle you'll feel. Over time, you won't miss those old habits, choices, and behaviors, and your life will flow more easily because you're living authentically, true to your values and priorities. Strategy number 3A. Focus on mindful goal setting. The natural outcome of having values and setting priorities is considering how these apply to your life in the future. Although worrying about the future contributes to an unsettled mind, planning for the future is an important and valuable exercise that can set the stage for true fulfillment in the years to come. But is it really possible to look toward a better future and still be happy with your life right now? Can you be content and evolving at the same time? We believe it's possible to focus on the future while still learning how to enjoy the present moment. There are many great writers and philosophical thinkers who talk about contentedness in the present moment. The renowned psychologist Abraham Maslow reminds us that the ability to be in the present moment is a major component of mental wellness. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Zen Buddhist monk and best-selling author, teaches that every moment in your life, every breath, every step you take should be consciously experienced as a moment of joyous arrival. He suggests that you don't need to wait for change, for something better, for the future, before you are content. You can be content right now if you choose to see all of the good and beauty around you in the present moment. Of course, this is easier said than done. The reality of our daily lives are constantly pulling us into the future. We worry about paying the bills, how our children will turn out, whether we'll remain healthy. And the very nature of setting goals is future-oriented. Longing and struggling against what is causes suffering. Wishing for more, for something different, for something better at the expense of contentment in the moment robs us of life. If that's the case, why should you focus on your future goals if they'll pull you away from the moment? Because change and transformation will happen to you whether or not you decide to focus on it. Change is a constant of life, whether we're sitting in the lotus position absorbed in the moment or wringing our hands about some imagined future outcome. So we might as well create our futures mindfully. When you embrace the truth that contentment and change can happen simultaneously, you reduce the tension between thinking it's an either-or proposition. There's a way to establish a balance between mindfulness and self-creation. You can view the process of creating and reaching your goals as a place for happiness and contentment. Rather than holding back happiness while you await an outcome, enjoy every step along the path. Every revelation, every small action toward your goals should be savored and celebrated. Knowing that goal setting isn't incompatible with mindfulness, let's discuss how to create and work toward your goals in a way that supports the bigger why of your life. When you first sit down to ponder your goals for the future, remember to have your core values and life priorities handy as points of reference. As long as your values and priorities remain valid, they should be the compass for directing your goals. Otherwise, you set yourself up for a future of frustration and unhappiness. In the next section, we'll go over the process that Steve uses to create simple goals focused on what's truly important. The benefit of this strategy is that you'll feel less stressed about the future and instead focus on what's currently going on in your life. Strategy number 3B. Create quarterly SMART goals. The simplest way to focus on what's truly important in life is to create SMART goals that will be achieved in the immediate future. This means you'll set goals for each quarter, that is, 3 months, instead of the year-long goals that often take you out of the present moment. To begin, let's start with a simple definition of SMART goals. George Duran first used the SMART acronym in the November 1981 issue of the Management Review. It stands for Specific, Measurable, Attainable, Relevant, and Time-Bound. Here's how it works. S. Specific. Specific goals answer your 6 W questions. Who, what, where, when, which, and why. When you can identify each element, you'll know which tools and actions are required to reach a goal. Who? Who is involved? What? What do you want to accomplish? Where? Where will you complete the goal? When? When do you want to do it? Which? Which requirements and constraints might get in your way? Why? Why are you doing it? Specificity is important because when you reach these milestones, date, location, and objective, you'll know for certain you have achieved your goal. M. Measurable. Measurable goals are defined with precise times, amounts, or other units, essentially anything that measures progress toward a goal. Creating measurable goals makes it easy to determine if you've progressed from point A to point B. Measurable goals also help you figure out when you're headed in the right direction and when you're not. Generally, a measurable goal statement answers questions starting with how, such as how much, how many, and how fast. A. Attainable. Attainable goals stretch the limits of what you think is possible. While they're not impossible to complete, they're often challenging and full of obstacles. The key to creating an attainable goal is to look at your current life and set an objective that seems slightly beyond your reach. That way, even if you fail, you still accomplish something of significance. R. Relevant. Relevant goals focus on what you truly desire. They are the exact opposite of inconsistent or scattered goals. They're in harmony with everything that's important in your life, from success in your career to happiness with the people you love. T. Time-bound. Time-bound goals have specific deadlines. You're expected to achieve your desired outcome before a target date. Time-bound goals are challenging and grounding. You can set your target date for today, or you can set it for a few months, a few weeks, or a few years from now. The key to creating a time-bound goal is to set a deadline you'll meet by working backward and developing habits. More on this later. SMART goals are clear and well-defined. There's no doubt about the result you want to achieve. At its deadline, you'll know if you have or haven't achieved a particular goal. As an example, here are SMART goals related to the 7 areas of your life that we mentioned in the previous section. 1. Career. I'll acquire 5 new projects for my web design consultancy through referrals, networking, and social media marketing campaigns within 2 months. 2. Family. I'll strengthen my bond with my family by taking them for a vacation at least once in 6 months. This will be accomplished by setting aside an hour each month during my review session and planning out future trip ideas. 3. Marriage. 4. Love partnership. I'll identify 3 things I really love about my partner and tell her about them on Friday night. This will be done by scheduling a 30-minute block on Tuesday so I can reminisce about all the good times we've shared together. 4. Spiritual, personal growth, self-improvement. I'll take 5 minutes each day to give thanks for everything that's good in my life. I'll develop this habit by setting aside time right before my lunch to remember what's important. 5. Leisure, social. I'll dedicate 3 hours every week to learn and practice watercolor painting. This will be done by eliminating unimportant habits like watching TV. 6. Life management. I'll save 10% of every paycheck and invest it in index funds through my 401k. 7. Health and fitness. I'll work out a minimum of 30 minutes per day, 3 days per week by December 31st. Hopefully, these 7 examples give you an idea of how to create smart goals that lead to a balanced life. Now let's go over a 6-step process that will turn this information into action. Step number 1. Identify what's important to you. The key to achieving meaningful goals isn't to focus on all the areas of your life. The reason is simple. If you want to find meaning in what you do, then you'll quickly feel overwhelmed if your days are fixated on a laundry list of goals. Yes, it's important to be forward-thinking, but you also want enough time to live in the present moment. Our advice is to focus on 3 to 4 areas of your life. You can do this by looking at the 7 areas we've discussed and identifying what's most important to you right now. From there, simply create goals that tap into an outcome you find both challenging and exciting. Step number 2. Focus on 3-month goals. It's been Steve's experience that long-term goals are constantly shifting. What seems urgent today often isn't important next month. So the strategy that works for him is to take the major priorities in his life and then break them down into 3-month or quarterly goals. Why should you focus on 3-month goals? Because your life is fast-paced and constantly shifting. In order to keep up with all these changes, it's often better to create goals for the short term, because this helps maintain consistent effort and a high level of motivation. It's also been Steve's experience that lengthy goals, that is, anything over 6 months, are often demotivating. When you know an outcome is months away, it's easy to procrastinate on taking consistent action. You keep putting off your goals, promising you'll work on them next week. Next thing you know, it's a year later and nothing has been accomplished. So to keep things simple, we recommend identifying the 3 to 4 areas of your life that are most important to you right now, and then creating a specific SMART goal for each one that you hope to achieve within the next 3 months. Step number 3. Use a weekly review to create a schedule. It's not always easy to consistently work on your goals when you have a dozen other obligations. Fortunately, there's a simple solution to this dilemma. Schedule a weekly review session, where you create a daily action plan for the next 7 days. The weekly review is a great concept that David Allen teaches in Getting Things Done. It's a simple process. Once a week, Steve prefers Sundays, look at the next 7 days and schedule the activities, projects you'd like to accomplish. You can accomplish all of this with 3 simple steps. 1. Answer 3 questions. Think carefully about the next 7 days and answer these 3 questions. What are my personal obligations? What are my priority projects? How much time do I have? Your responses to these questions are extremely important because they'll determine the amount of time that can be devoted to your goals during the next 7 days. The lesson here is that you shouldn't schedule your week with hundreds of activities. That's the quickest path to leading a mentally cluttered life. Instead, it's better to recognize, ahead of time, a realistic amount of time that can be dedicated to your important goals. 2. Schedule project tasks. After answering these 3 questions, map out the next 7 days. The simplest way to do this is to look at the list for each goal and schedule time to follow up on the most important activities. 3. Process captured ideas. If you're like Barry and Steve, then you probably have dozens of great ideas every week related to your goals. The question is, how do you follow up on them? My advice is to process these notes, making 1 of 2 choices. 1. Take action on it immediately. Or 2, schedule a time when you'll follow up on it. Here's how that would work. If the idea is actionable, then write out a step-by-step plan for how you'll do it. Simply write down a series of actions you'll take on this idea and then schedule these ideas into your week. If the idea is not actionable, Then put the idea into an archive folder that's reviewed every month. If you do this for every idea you have, you won't forget to follow up at the right time. The weekly review is an important part of achieving your goals. When you plan out each week, you create a sense of urgency, making it more likely you'll follow up on each goal. Your weekly review will also help you create a schedule you can turn into a list of daily activities. Step number 4. Take action on your goals. It's impossible to achieve your goals without action. In fact, the trick to getting what you want is to schedule time into your week that's solely dedicated to your goals. That's why we recommend the following actions. Turn your goal into a project. The easiest way to do this is to look at the target date and work your way backward. Visualize reaching this milestone. What are these specific steps you completed to get to this point? Once you identify the actions, you simply put them down into a simple step-by-step list. Schedule time to work on goals. How much time you spend on each goal depends on what's required for each activity. Some tasks might only require a few minutes each week, while others require hours out of your day. That's why it's important to understand the time commitment of each goal. Figure out how much time you'll need for each task and schedule them into your week. Turn goals into priority tasks. We all have those busy schedules full of activities that conflict with one another. The solution? Start your day by working on goals first thing in the morning, or some other time when you feel the most energetic. Schedule time for single actions. Many people get bogged down by the single actions that are important but not immediately urgent. A quick fix for this is to schedule time each week to complete a number of single actions. The tool that Steve uses for these single actions is the Todoist app. Whenever he sets a 3-month goal, he creates it as a project in Todoist, and then he adds all the single actions that are required to achieve it. Finally, he schedules specific actions into his weekly calendar. For more on how to do this in Todoist, here's a comprehensive guide they put together that'll walk you through the entire process. Step number 5. Review your goals. The key to achieving anything in life is consistency. That's why you should review your goal project on a daily basis and make sure you're hitting every important milestone. We recommend creating specific measurements for each step of the process and using a weekly review to make sure you're touching on those as well. Setting aside time for a daily review is a key step to achieving any goal. It doesn't matter how busy you are. If you're not reviewing your goals every day, you'll be less likely to succeed. The truth is, sometimes life can throw major curveballs in your pursuit of a long-term objective. Often these challenges can be frustrating and cause you to feel less excited about a goal. So our advice is simple. Review your goals at least 2 to 3 times per day. That way, you can keep them at the forefront of your mind and remind yourself why you're taking a specific action on a daily basis. Step number 6. Evaluate your quarterly goals. You work hard on your goals every day. You even review them on a weekly and daily basis. The problem? Some people never take a step back and understand the why behind each goal. In other words, people don't review their goals to see if they're actually worth pursuing. That's why it's important to evaluate your goals every 3 months. Make sure they are aligned with your life purpose, and then create new goals based on what you've learned. You can complete this evaluation by answering a number of questions. Have I attained the desired outcome? What were the successful and unsuccessful strategies? Did I put 100% of my effort toward completing these goals? If not, why? Have I achieved results consistent with my efforts? Should I create a similar goal for the next quarter? What goals should I eliminate or alter? Is there anything new I'd like to try? Even though it takes a few hours to complete this evaluation, you should always take time to do it every quarter. It'll be your ultimate safeguard against wasting time on a goal that doesn't align with your long-term plans. So, that was a brief introduction to the value of setting SMART goals. Now, the best way to make sure you're actually setting goals that you truly want is to connect them with a personal passion. In the next and final strategy, we'll show you how to do this. Strategy number 4. Connect goals to your passions. Too many people live lives of quiet desperation. They wake up with a low-level sense of dread, anxiety, or sadness. At work, they feel underutilized, unappreciated, and underwhelmed. And when they get home, they feel mentally and physically exhausted, with just enough energy to take care of the kids, fix a meal, and plop onto the couch to watch a few hours of television. Then they wake up and do it all over again. Even if this doesn't describe you exactly, I'm sure you can relate. We all get in the occasional rut. We accept less than our dreams. We stay in jobs that don't inspire us or make us happy. All of this angst adds to our mental clutter and distraction. Life has a way of swallowing us up, and before we know it, we're far down a path that feels like nothing like who we are or what we want for our lives. By the time we realize it, we have obligations and responsibilities that add yet another reason to stick with the status quo, even if we hate it. While the concept of finding your passion might remind you of those woo-woo quotes you often see on Facebook or Instagram, it's still incredibly important to connect what you do on a daily basis with goals that you feel are truly important. The reality is that your mental health can be negatively impacted when you feel unfulfilled with your work. Think about how much negative mental energy you've devoted to a bad boss, a job you hate, or a career move you regret. We spend huge chunks of our lives working, so the decision you make about your job will have the potential to make or break your overall happiness. If you find work that you love, you not only free your mind from oppressive thoughts, but will also feel energized in all areas of your life. So what does it mean to live your passion? We think it can be defined with a few examples. Most days you wake up feeling enthusiastic and happy about what you have going on that day. You feel like you're in the right place, doing something in your work or life that feels authentic to who you are and how you're wired. You attract interesting, like-minded people in your life and work. You have a sense of self-confidence and empowerment about what you're doing because it's a great fit for you. You experience a deeper purpose or meaning, or at least you're more fulfilled in general. Your overall life is better, and your relationships are happier because you're more content, self-directed, and present in your work. Finding your passion and making it part of your life isn't something that happens overnight, and it isn't an exact paint-by-numbers process. It's not like teaching you how to follow a recipe or change the oil in your car. It involves a variety of actions and experiments to figure it out. In fact, Barry teaches the process in her Path to Passion online course, and in her book, The 52-Week Life Passion Project. Everyone who reads this book is unique. We all have different personalities, aptitudes, dreams, and life obligations. What you determine to be your passion may differ from what others find for themselves. So that's why we recommend a 14-step exercise you can use to find your passion. Step 1. Write a vision. Using your values and priorities as guides, write down what you want in every area of your life, especially in your work. You may not know precisely what to include, but a good starting point is to describe what you don't want. For example, when Barry wrote her life vision 5 years ago, it looked like this. I live in an interesting, progressive, vibrant city where I can enjoy nature, the arts, culture, great food, and like-minded people. I'm working in a career I love where I help people utilizing my coaching and interpersonal skills, as well as my writing and creative skills. My work is flexible and allows me the freedom to travel and work from anywhere. My income continues to increase, but I don't allow my career to create imbalance in my life. I'm in a relationship that is loving, respectful, and mutually supportive with a smart, creative, funny, kind, and ethical man. I have a network of close and supportive friends and family with whom I regularly spend time. And I have a loving, positive relationship with each of my 3 young adult children. I frequently spend time in nature and travel to new locations several times a year. I remain active, energetic, and health conscious with every passing year. And I remain open to new opportunities and possibilities for my life. She can honestly say that she's made this vision a reality by moving to a new city, building an online business related to personal development and helping others, going on several amazing trips, and nurturing her relationships, health, and freedom. Our recommendation is to write down what you want and then revise it along the way whenever you recognize something that you don't want in your life. Finally, post this vision where you can see it every day. Step 2. Revisit your current life. If you feel yourself focusing too much on what you don't like about your life, then take a look at your current life to see how much of it matches the vision from the previous exercise. You want to maintain those things and remind yourself that part of your vision is already happening for you, right now. Write a list of everything in your work that you do enjoy or view as positive, whether it's the comfy desk chair or the client you really like. Write the same list for your personal life, including everything about your life that's working well for you. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater when you're seeking your passion. Sometimes we overlook positive things in our lives when we're so focused on the negative. If you want to learn more about this subject, then read this blog post on mindful journaling. That will help you recognize possible passions you might be overlooking right now. Step 3. Investigate yourself. Begin learning more about who you are, what motivates you, and what your strengths are. Take some online personality assessments like the Myers-Briggs test, the Kiersey Temperament Sorter, or strengths assessment tests like StrengthsFinder 2.0 or this free online strengths test. Learn everything you can about your personality type. You'll find that this information about you gives you a sense of self-awareness that is both comforting and enlightening. Step 4. Start reading. Set aside 10 minutes a day to read everything you can about your interests or ideas for potential passions. Look at how other people have translated these interests and ideas into careers. Make notes about anything that seems interesting or relevant to you. You should also consider taking an online course to gain more in-depth knowledge and understanding of what you're investigating as a possible passion. Step 5. Narrow your search. As you begin reading and researching, you may find one or more career options that jump out at you. Deepen your research on those topics to find out exactly what kind of training or education is needed, who's already successful in this area, what kind of salary you could make, and how long it would take to become proficient in this area. Start filling in the blanks of all the details necessary to make this possible passion a reality for you and the structure of your life. Step 6. Find a mentor. Find one or two people who are doing what you want to do and doing it well. Reach out to them. Send them emails to ask if you can get their advice. Make a list of questions you want to ask. Step 7. Brainstorm and write. Think about all of the possible action steps you'll need to take to move the needle toward living your passion once you've done your research. Make one long list of actions, then go back and prioritize and order the list. Break down each action into the smallest possible steps. Step 8. Take the first action. Do one concrete thing to get the ball rolling toward your passion. Maybe it's getting your resume in order, signing up for a training class, or making a call to someone. You may not feel 100% sure that this first step is the right step, but you have to take it to find out. So set a date and take it. If you get stuck, refer back to the previous strategy on setting SMART quarterly goals. We recommend turning your pursuit of a meaningful career into a project where you can take action on a daily basis. Step 9. Decide on a test drive. One of the best ways to figure out if a passion really is a passion is to test it out. Rather than making a full-on commitment to a new job or starting a business, find a way to get hands-on experience through volunteering, a part-time job, or even shadowing someone for a few days. This test drive gives you real-world feedback to help you decide if you've truly found what you love. Step 10. Consider other people. Remember to keep those close to you involved and in the loop. You'll likely meet some resistance. Think ahead about this possibility and how you'll handle it. What's the bottom line for you? For them, keep the lines of communication open. Step 11. Save money. Begin putting money aside in a savings account. You may need this as you make your transition to something new. It might be used for additional education or training, to get a business started, or to sustain you financially while you get a business up and running. Start thinking about ways you can bring in extra cash in a pinch. Even if you transition from one full-time job to another, it's always good to have a backup plan. Step 12. Plan your income. Determine your lowest acceptable yearly income. To do this, you'll need to know how you spend your money, where you can, and are willing to, cut back, and how long you're willing to live at this income level. You don't want to go into debt, so this needs to be a realistic number that can sustain a basic lifestyle. One tool that's great for monitoring your spending and staying on top of your finances is the Mint app. Here, you can enter your billing information, current debt, and bank accounts to get a complete picture of your financial situation. Then you can use Mint to fully understand how much money you need on a monthly basis. Step 13. Deal with your current job. Be sure to include as part of your action steps how you'll move from your current job into your new one. Will you continue working at your old job as you start your new work? How and when will you discuss this with your employer? Be sure to leave on a good note and handle things professionally so you can maintain those ties. Step 14. Stay motivated with action. When moving from something safe and secure to the unknown, it's natural to feel a lot of fear. Thinking, planning, fretting, and pontificating only go so far, and they contribute to your mental clutter. Daily focused action will move you forward. If you don't know what to do, just do something. Take one small action in the direction of your dream. One of the positive outcomes of this 14-step exercise is that you create a sense of purpose as you take control of your life and move towards something more meaningful. In fact, the effort of working toward your passion is sometimes as satisfying as the outcome. Greg Johnson, author of the book, Living Life on Purpose, A Guide to Creating a Life of Success and Significance, says, "Focus on the journey, not the destination. Joy is not found in finishing an activity, but in doing it. Much of our mental distress and negative thinking comes from feeling uncertain and out of control about our lives. Once you start taking action toward finding your passion, you'll have more and more mental clarity and peace of mind." Okay, at this point, you've learned a number of strategies you can use to overcome your negative thought patterns and reduce the impact of life obligations that don't truly matter. In the next section, we'll talk about the negative impact that some relationships have on your mental well-being and what to do about them. Part 3. Decluttering Your Relationships. The Negative Impact of Bad Relationships. Your children drive you crazy. Your parents are too needy. Your boss is a jerk. Your spouse doesn't understand you. Your best friend never calls. How often do you feel irritated, frustrated, or even furious with the people in your life? The answer to this question is important because relationship problems are a leading cause of unhappiness that people feel in life. We replay unpleasant conversations in our heads and stew for hours over a perceived slight. Or we're detached from our friends and loved ones, only to feel lonely, isolated, and unloved. We create false mental narratives about other people, assigning to them thoughts and behaviors that may or may not be true, but that feel hurtful and overwhelming nonetheless. Now, it's true that you can't coexist with others without the occasional misunderstanding. However, if you find that most interactions leave you emotionally drained, then you should look for ways to either improve these relationships or remove certain people from your life. Imagine if you had no anxiety related to the people in your life. How much less cluttered would your mind be? How much more energy could you put toward productive, positive pursuits? Although the important people in our lives can be the source of mental distress, our close relationships remain one of the fundamental components in life contributing to long-term happiness. Can great relationships lead to happiness? One of the longest studies ever conducted on happiness is the Harvard Study of Adult Development, previously known as the Grant Study in Social Adjustments. Since 1937, researchers at Harvard have been examining the question of what makes us happy by following 268 men who entered college in the late 1930s. They have followed them through war, career, marriage and divorce, parenthood and grandparenthood, and old age. Robert Waldinger, the psychiatrist and Harvard Medical School professor who currently leads the study, says the long-term research is unequivocal. Close relationships and social connections keep you happy and healthy. That is the bottom line. People who were more concerned with achievement or less concerned with connection were less happy. Basically, humans are wired for personal connections. How is it that relationships can contribute so much to our happiness while also being a huge source of mental fatigue? The key is not just having relationships, it's having high-quality relationships. Whether a romantic partner, friend, family member, or even work associate, a high-quality relationship involves prioritizing the relationship, open communication, healthy conflict resolution, mutual trust and respect, shared interests, some level of emotional and/or intellectual intimacy, acceptance and forgiveness, physical touch for personal relationships. It's in our best interest to be proactive about how we choose the people in our lives and how we choose to interact with them. Creating, maintaining, and nurturing good relationships is necessary for our well-being and peace of mind. Rather than looking to others to make relationship changes, the best place to start is within you. Even if your family members, friends, and business associates need to improve their relationship skills, you can go a long way in reducing stress in your life by initiating changes in you. You can't change others anyway. You only have the power to control how you interact with and react to the people around you. Let's look at four ways you can improve your relationships, which have a direct positive impact on your mindset. Relationship strategy number one. Be more present. A University of North Carolina study of relatively happy, non-distressed couples revealed that couples who actively practiced mindfulness saw improvements to their relationship happiness. They also enjoyed healthier levels of relationship stress, stress coping efficacy, and overall stress. The practice of mindfulness allows us to be present with our partners, to be less emotionally reactive with them, and to more quickly overcome stressful situations in the relationship. Relationship presence doesn't just apply to romantic couples. You can practice mindfulness in all of your relationships. What does it mean to be more present in your relationships? Here are a few strategies you can practice. Practice empathic listening. Have you ever noticed that some people don't listen closely during a conversation? For many folks, it's hard to pay attention because our minds are full of so many thoughts. Often when someone's talking, our mind is more focused on the minutiae of our lives, our worries, or what we want to say next. Empathic, or active, listening is a willingness to step outside of your distracted mind and listen to their words in a non-judgmental way. Empathy is the grace note of empathic listening, as it allows the speaker to feel safe, validated, and understood. Active listening isn't a part of a conversation in the traditional sense. There's no give and take, sharing dialogue, or competing to talk. With empathic listening, it's all about the other person and what they're trying to communicate, with their words, with the words left unspoken, and with their emotions. As an empathic listener, you must be willing to allow the other person to dominate the conversation and determine the topic discussed. Remain completely attentive to what the other person is saying. Avoid interrupting, even when you have something important to add. Ask open-ended questions and invite more from the speaker. Avoid coming to premature conclusions or offering solutions. Reflect back to the speaker what you heard them say. It may seem that empathic listening only provides benefits for the speaker, but as the listener, you're in a state of focused awareness. When you listen empathically, it's impossible to be stuck in looping thoughts or distracted by worry or regret. You can start practicing empathic listening with your partner, family members, and close friends. In your next interaction, commit to 10 minutes of active listening where you are focused solely on the other person and what they're saying. This will bring you closer to your loved one and also give you a break from your cluttered thoughts. Mindful speaking. Negative thinking can have a damaging impact on the quality of your relationships. If your language is filled with fearful comments, self-condemnation, disparaging remarks about others, or self-pity, you do nothing more than convince others that you're a negative person to be around. On the other hand, when you focus on fostering positive interactions, you can strengthen the relationships you do have. For instance, Dr. John Gottman discovered through his research that there should be 5 times as many positive interactions between partners as there are negative in order for a relationship to be stable and a marriage to last. Gottman's findings can be applied to other relationships as well. Conflict and negativity tend to push people away. Awareness is always the first step toward change. We recommend paying close attention to what you say during a conversation, particularly in your love relationship. Place a mental filter between your thoughts and words, recognizing the power your words have on one of the most important people in your life. Resist the temptation to simply react to someone's words or actions. Take a moment to choose your words carefully. Speak in ways that are loving, compassionate, and respectful. And try to use a calm, non-threatening voice, even if the other person is agitated or angry. As you speak more mindfully, those around you will often respond in kind. Even if they don't, you empower yourself to maintain self-control and inner peace. Through the practice of mindful speaking, you not only improve the quality of your relationships, but also improve the quality of your inner world. Loving kindness meditation. A loving kindness meditation focuses on developing feelings of warmth towards others. You can use a loving kindness meditation specifically to improve your relationships with specific people in your life in order to reduce negative thinking about them. This kind of meditation cultivates our awareness of others as human beings deserving of compassion and love, even when they're being difficult, which can decrease relationship conflicts and improve your own well-being. There are 3 studies that support this claim. First, scientists from Stanford University found that meditation that focuses on loving kindness increases people's feelings of social connectedness. Also, according to a University of Utah study, loving kindness meditation practice decreased overall levels of perceived hostility, insensitivity, interference, and ridicule from others. This special meditation practice will not only improve your intimate relationships, but your relationship with you as well. Finally, in a landmark study, researchers found that practicing 7 weeks of loving-kindness meditation increased feelings of love, joy, contentment, gratitude, pride, hope, interest, amusement, and awe. You can practice a loving-kindness meditation anywhere, but start with a short 10-minute meditation in a quiet place without distraction. Here's a simple process for practicing this habit. Sit in a comfortable position, either on the floor with your legs crossed and your hands sitting loosely in your lap, or sitting up straight in a chair with your legs uncrossed, feet on the floor, and hands resting in your lap. Close your eyes and take 2 or 3 deep cleansing breaths, and then begin counting each breath, going from 1 to 10. Once you're relaxed, bring to mind a person to whom you wish to send loving kindness, and consider their positive qualities, the light of goodness you see in them. After you focus on their positive qualities for a few minutes, mentally say the following statements directed to your loved one. May you be happy. May you be well. May you be loved. There's nothing wrong with altering the words slightly to focus on the needs of the individual. There are no hard and fast rules. You might substitute the person's name rather than saying you. You could also add thoughts like, may you be free from inner and outer harm and danger. May you be safe and protected. May you be free of mental suffering or distress. May you be free of physical pain and suffering. May you be healthy and strong. May you be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, with ease. Not only will this meditation practice improve your relationships, but it also will increase your emotional well-being and peace of mind. How you adapt the practice to your personal circumstances is ultimately up to you, but it remains at its heart a deeply transformative process in your efforts towards mental decluttering and peace of mind. End the comparisons to others. Let us not look at the talents we wish we had or pine away for the gifts that are not ours, but instead do the best we can with what we have. B.J. Richardson. Comparing ourselves unfavorably to other people is one of the major causes of mental turmoil and emotional suffering. If only I were as attractive as my friend, why can't I be as smart as my brother? They have so much more money than we do. She travels all the time, and I never get to go anywhere. These thoughts can spiral out of control, making us feel bad about ourselves while viewing other people as the cause of our unhappiness. By measuring ourselves against the achievements, possessions, or traits of everyone else, we set the stage for the disintegration of potentially fulfilling relationships. In their work as authors and entrepreneurs, Steve and Barry have seen how easy it is to make comparisons with those who have achieved more success. I've fallen into the trap of measuring myself against my peers, says Barry. It undermines my focus on the work I'm doing, making me feel inept and envious until I regain my footing and realize I'm on my own journey, which should be different from those around me. Comparison fosters so many negative feelings that it destroys more than just your peace of mind. It damages your relationships. The more you ruminate about how you measure up, the worse you feel about both you and the other person. Feelings of envy, jealousy, shame, guilt, embarrassment, self-loathing, resentment, and anger are not qualities that enhance a relationship or make you attractive to others. Gretchen Rubin, author of the New York Times #1 best-selling book, The Happiness Project, says, negative emotions like loneliness, envy, and guilt have an important role to play in a happy life. They're big flashing signs that something needs to change. We all compare ourselves from time to time, and sometimes comparing can motivate us to improve ourselves or to achieve something that we observe in others. But when comparison causes those big flashing signs to light up, it's time to take action. It does take mental effort to disengage from comparing and the emotions that go along with it. But changing your reactions to those who have more will free you up to follow your own path and become the best person you are meant to be. Here are 3 simple and short practices that can help you end the practice of comparing yourself to others. Practice #1. Practice radical self-acceptance. No amount of comparing, fretting, and ruminating will change who you are, how you look, what you've achieved, or what you own in this moment. The person you are right now is all you've got, at least for today. Rather than resisting this person, leap into it, accept it, and acknowledge that you're perfectly okay right now. Simply adopting this moment of radical self-acceptance is liberating and empowering. Practice #2. Change What You Can. American theologian Reinhold Niebuhr is known for writing the Serenity Prayer, in which he states, "God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference." Embracing these serenity, courage, and wisdom Niebuhr prays for will give you practical tools for tempering your longings and frustrations with realism. Comparing yourself to others you admire can inspire you to change for the better, to step up your game, and to improve your life. But sometimes, no matter how hard you may try, you'll never be able to match the accomplishments of a particular person. You may never look like your fashion model friend or become as wealthy as your millionaire cousin. Rather than blindly longing for something you don't have, make decisions through the filter of your inner wisdom. What can you change? What do you want to change? Go back to your values and life priorities to help you define your life on your own terms, rather than trying to emulate someone else who may have differing values and priorities. You may still occasionally long for something you can't have, but do the best you can with what you do have. Focus on your strengths and continue to practice self-acceptance. Practice number 3. Express gratitude constantly. Comparisons blind us to all that we already have. We become so focused on what someone else has and how we don't measure up that we neglect to acknowledge all of the blessings around us. It's a matter of choosing to see the glass half full rather than half empty, and acknowledging your gratitude for the water in the glass. When you wake up in the morning, before you get out of bed, make a mental list of everything good in your life and focus on each blessing for a minute or two. Do this before you go to sleep as well. You can reinforce feelings of gratitude by writing them in a gratitude journal. At the end of the day, mentally review everything positive that occurred and write it down. Take a moment to consider what your life would be like without the people you love, your home, your health, etc. When you consider having your blessings taken away from you, it becomes very clear how blessed you are. Relationship strategy number 2. Getting unstuck from the past. We talked earlier in the book about ruminating on the past and how it can cause those feelings of being mentally overwhelmed. When you think about the past, you may notice that many of your thoughts relate to encounters with the current people in your life. You replay conversations that were unpleasant or hurtful. You dwell on a broken relationship or a lost love. Maybe you reflect with longing and sadness about children who have grown and moved out of the house, friends who have drifted away, or siblings who seem disconnected. Perhaps you encountered relationship pain that was so deep and wounding you have never really healed from it, and it continues to disrupt your life and sabotage your thoughts. Looping these memories can trigger unresolved anger, shame, guilt, fear, and sadness. Because relationships are so integral to our lives, it's not surprising that people from our pasts continue to cause us pain weeks, months, or even years after an encounter or relationship has ended. You replay these mind movies so often that you start to identify with them. Dragging the past around in this way is a heavy burden that drains you of energy and inner peace. Sometimes we replay past situations in an unconscious attempt to resolve them. But ruminating only keeps us stuck in the past and miserable in the present. How can we break free from our thoughts about the past so they don't continue to imprison us or bind us to people who should no longer be part of our lives? Eckhart Tolle, author of The Power of Now, says, "We can learn to break the habit of accumulating and perpetuating old emotion by flapping our wings, metaphorically speaking, and refrain from mentally dwelling on the past, regardless of whether something happened yesterday or 30 years ago. We can learn not to keep situations or events alive in our minds, but to return our attention continuously to the pristine, timeless present moment, rather than be caught up in mental movie-making." Easier said than done, right? It's hard to just drop painful memories and push these thoughts out of our minds. Hard, but not impossible. And certainly worth the effort if you want to free yourself to enjoy positive, loving relationships in your current life. If you want to be present with your family and friends today, you can't remain stuck in your thoughts about past relationships and old hurts. Here are some ways you can clear the clutter of negative thoughts about the past. Resolve what you can. If there's an unresolved problem or hurt between you and another person, take action to resolve the situation. Rather than stewing about the past issue, initiate communication with the other person to talk through it, even if you feel you were wronged. It's hard to reach out to someone who has hurt you, but the discomfort of doing this is far less than the slow torment of lingering on past pain. Feelings of anger or hurt can make open dialogue difficult, but learn more about healthy communication so you can have a productive talk with the other person. Part of resolution might include sharing your feelings and pain, listening to the other person's perspective, offering or asking for forgiveness, and discussing the future of the relationship. Break the spell of your internal story about the past by talking about it openly. Having a productive conversation with someone from your past isn't always possible, but when it is, it can be the best way to release you from feeling trapped by your memories and pain. Challenge your story. When you mentally replay a situation over and over, your perspective becomes the ultimate truth for you. It seems impossible to view the situation from any other angle. You may believe your memories and interpretation of the relationship are correct, but the other person may have an entirely different perspective. Challenge your own interpretation by stepping into the other person's shoes. You can do this by answering these questions. How might they see what happened between you? What could you have said or done that they might have misinterpreted? Is it possible that your memories are incorrect? Does the other person have a valid point of view? Is it possible that things didn't occur exactly as you believe they did? When you empathize with the other person, it removes some of the pain or anger associated with the memory. By challenging your own beliefs and memories, you give yourself permission to view the situation from a less negative point of view. Offer forgiveness. The person from your past may never apologize, but offer forgiveness anyway. You don't have to forgive them in person, but forgive them inside your own heart and mind. Clinging to your anger and pain only prolongs suffering and mental distress. You forgive to set yourself free from this suffering, so you can move on to live in the present with a clear mind. Best-selling self-improvement author Dr. Wayne Dyer says, "Forgiving others is essential for spiritual growth. Your experience of someone who has hurt you, while painful, is now nothing more than a thought or feeling that you carry around. These thoughts of resentment, anger, and hatred represent slow, debilitating energies that will disempower you if you continue to let these thoughts occupy space in your head. If you could release them, you would know more peace." Forgiving someone doesn't necessarily mean you reconcile with them. It means you let go of resentment and anger so it doesn't further poison you. It may be hard to forgive, especially when the offending person hasn't accepted responsibility for their behavior. But you can begin by recognizing this person is doing the best they know how with the skills they possess. When you find yourself ruminating about their past offenses, shift your thoughts away from them and to yourself. Acknowledge your feelings without blaming the other person for them. Ask yourself, what have I learned from this? How can I use it to improve myself? As Dr. Dyer says, your life is like a play with several acts. Some of the characters who enter have short roles to play, others much larger. Some are villains and others are good guys, but all of them are necessary. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the play. Embrace them all and move on to the next act. Offering forgiveness might require you to forgive yourself for something you said or did in a relationship. React honestly on your actions and how they might have hurt or offended the other person. You'll likely come up with many reasons why you behaved as you did, and perhaps have some legitimate rationalizations for your actions. But if there is any part of your behavior that was wrong, you must accept it and forgive yourself for it. It becomes easier to forgive yourself when you shift your perspective about past mistakes. Rather than beating yourself up over past relationship mistakes, try to honor the past and see your actions as a blessing. They were part of who you were at the time, and you needed to learn from them. Now you can move on and forgive yourself, knowing who you want to be and how you want to behave. Relationship strategy number 3, mindfulness with your partner. The two previous strategies we've discussed apply to any relationship in your life, but your intimate love relationship stands apart as one that deserves special attention. With your spouse or romantic partner, you have the opportunity for tremendous emotional and personal growth, especially if you view your partner as someone who's in your life to teach you something. It's through this relationship that you can learn to be more present and compassionate. Ironically, our love relationships tend to present us with the biggest challenges in our lives, causing the most mental clutter and distress. Practicing mindfulness in your love relationship gives you a tool for strengthening your intimate connection while reducing stress and angst in your life. Mindfulness expert and professor of medicine emeritus John Kabat-Zinn describes mindfulness as paying attention to the present moment with intention, while letting go of judgment. This practice might seem impossible in the heat of an argument when you just want to lash out at your